dream? What hidden messages do your dreams reveal? Stay tuned because there's more coming up. Hello, everyone. I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio and How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. It's Thursday, May 10th, and once again, we are coming to you live from Los Angeles. Can I tell you, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous Thursday afternoon here in Los Angeles. Blue skies. We also have Obama coming to the hood, so it's all so exciting here in L.A. Thank you for joining us. We love to hear from you, so please call in to listen live, or you can also ask questions at 347-857-2710, and you can also email us here at the studio at goodvibeexperience@gmail.com. And we've got exciting news over here at Shoes, and we're going to be trying on some new shoes very soon, in a couple of weeks. So stick around for more information about the pair of shoes we're going to be trying on in a couple of weeks, and I hope you'll join us. But today's show is fascinating, and I have a lovely guest who is back because by popular demand, his services are greatly needed. And I didn't know if you know this, but each year hundreds of thousands of older persons, unfortunately, are abused, neglected, and exploited. So many victims are frail and vulnerable and cannot help themselves and depend on others to meet their most basic needs. And in 1996, my guest today took a hiatus from the practice of business law to care for his aging grandmother. And during that time, he realized how difficult it was, even for a licensed attorney, to arrange proper care and asset protection strategies for an aging loved one. And as a result, he founded the law firm he wished had been available for his grandmother. My guest and his dedicated staff of professionals offer unparalleled resources and experiences with a service-oriented and compassionate approach where elder law and elder care meet. That's lovely. Service-oriented. When's the last time that was in a description of someone? I think it's a beautiful, beautiful idea and concept to behold. So please give a warm welcome and welcome back to the show, Mitchell Karazoff. Hi, Mitch.
Hey, Lauren. Thank you, and thank you for that wonderful introduction.
You're welcome. And it's all true, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I am a consumer myself, so I don't like to get bad service, if you will. And in our situation with what our clients go through, they really needed a lot of assistance, a lot of help. So we try to be there for them in any way that we can during these difficult times that they're usually experiencing. So
you know what, and I think no matter what your field of expertise is, it's how do you stand out from the crowd, and what you offer is the service and the compassionate approach. And, you know, this is kind of a hot topic, I think, that a lot of people perhaps don't want to address because it's a little too daunting for them, and maybe the not knowing aspect of it. So if you could define elder abuse for our listeners, and I think that might be helpful for them to know what it is we're referring to.
Elder abuse, of course, there can be a physical component, emotional, financial. It can be from making sure that someone gets to the doctor, gets the right type of nutrition, medications, not managing their finances properly, taking advantage of their finances. I mean, there's so many different aspects to it. You know, with a child, it's typically the abuse is just emotional and physical, and I shouldn't say just, but that's bad enough. But with seniors, typically what we see is mainly a financial abuse aspect to it that might have tangential emotional and physical abuse. But a lot of it is really the source comes from the financial abuse.
And who are the primary perpetrators of this elder abuse?
Well, unfortunately, and I think this is why it isn't out there as much as it should be, is most of it happens within the family. You know, they say about 66% of it is perpetrated by people who hold power of attorney documents and are the trustees for their family members. And most of the time, of course, that's a parent. So I think that's why it doesn't get out there as much. There are caregivers who do commit this and strangers. And it's been on the rise in all categories, really, ever since the economy got bad.
Yeah. I just wanted to read a little something for our listeners, and you probably know all this excuse me, information about the issue of elder mistreatment and how it's gaining attention of law enforcement because more people are living longer than ever before. And the U.S. Census Bureau projects that more than 62, and this is a staggering figure, that more than 62 million Americans will be age 65 or older in 2025, and that's about an increase of 78% from 2001. And this is what will blow your mind. And more than 7.4 million will be age 85 or older, which is an increase of nearly 68% from 2001. So the aging population is going to require more care and protection than is currently available or possible. And who is it that is going to be supposedly available to care for our elder parents are the children or some member of the family whom we trust. And here you're telling me that perhaps when money is thrown into the equation, a red flag is raised.
You know, I think that is such a good set of facts that you're giving us because I think this goes back to the issue about, well, who is going to care for the parent and why does this type of abuse happen a lot of times with the finances? And I think what I've seen throughout the years is a lot of it starts from the fact that seniors do not plan properly for the necessity to have care. Everybody wants to think that they're just going to go to sleep one night and they're not going to wake up and they're not going to go through needing care. They're going to be able to do everything. And, that is not typically what happens. So what ends up happening is these people become prime targets for financial abuse because they've tried to be independent for too long and they basically have put themselves at risk because they don't have the proper resources available. They don't have the systems in place. And so all of a sudden there's a crisis, desperation, and then a lot of times the person who steps in isn't necessarily always the right one. But the fact remains that you have somebody who's hanging on to their independence, the senior that is, and a lot of times that makes them a prime target for abuse because somebody comes in who tells them whatever they want to hear, and that means you can be independent, you can do whatever you want, I'll just help you, and that's how a lot of times they open themselves up for the financial abuse.
So what you're saying is perhaps a family should, let's say, come to you because you practice elder law and discuss trust administration of putting everything in a trust and who is going to be responsible, the fiduciary responsible person, etc., so that even though something may happen, there's a legal document that says this is how it has to be.
The first line of defense, if you will, is, you're right, to put a plan in place, get your power of attorney documents set up, your trust, identify who should be the proper person to be in control whenever you need some help, and that doesn't mean that they have to wait to come in until the crisis, but they could partner with you early on and make your plan known, but also look at your financial situation to see what is really realistic. Do you have long-term care insurance? If you don't, how are you going to pay for long-term care? Look at doing a preliminary Medi-Cal plan to see what kind of government benefits from long-term care, Medi-Cal or VA. Look at the reality of needing care in the future and how you're going to pay for it. And if you don't need it, okay, well, great, wonderful. you've planned for the worst possible scenario and it didn't happen, wonderful. But if you at least plan that these things can happen, you're going to be in a much better situation. The family's going to be more intimately involved and know what's going on. You're at a lower risk of financial abuse because there's no mystery. People know what you have and know what the plan is.
That's sound advice. And so how, maybe how is not the right question to ask, but what do we need to convey to our listeners to make them act sooner than later that long-term care insurance is something one should get when you're maybe newly married because you're younger, and like any insurance, you're paying for, oh, you know what, you may need it, but you're younger, so you're betting that you won't. So your costs will be lower compared to when you're older and you really do need it. That's when you, you know, pay much too much for the same kind of return.
I think that people, you know, a lot of people who really need to look at it now are people who are pre-retirement in their 40s, 50s, even in their 60s, to start looking at that as a real possibility. If you're older than that, people should still look into it, but a lot of times people are precluded because of pre-existing medical conditions or the expense might be staggering. So I think, yes, people, they should look at it early on, but I think we've got a crisis looming now for people who are going to be that 65 in whatever, what did you say, 2025, that they need to start looking at these things now. And also be realistic about what your family history is with health conditions and what your own health issues are, unrelated to any kind of hereditary issues, and see what might happen to somebody in that situation, what kind of care they might need, and plan for it.
So give us kind of a scenario. Okay, someone has decided, well, I'm going to plan for this, especially with what's going on currently in our economy with health care and the aging population and all this kind of stuff. What is the first step someone needs to do when they call you or someone with your background?
A good way to start is by looking at creating an estate plan, the legal documents, that is.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be your power of attorney for finance, your advanced health care directive, your living trust, and a pour-over will. And the reason that I say looking at that is because that is, if you will, a summary of what it is you're going to do in the what you're going to do in the future when somebody needs to take over for you. What's going to be done? Who's going to be in control? It gets people to really think about, oh, okay, what happens if I do need somebody to help me? Who that person's going to be, and then you start looking at the financial situation. Say, okay, well, you know, I've got a house. The house is almost paid for. I've got some retirement savings. I've got this type of insurance. Okay, how would I pay for it in the future when I needed care in the home? So you're starting to look at your assets. Oh, okay, well, maybe what I would be doing is downsizing out of that bigger house and going to a smaller condo, and then I have more available cash. Start looking at the investments that you might either acquire now or what you might look at as investments in the future to help pay for that retirement. And look at having the fun, too. Don't just look at what's going to happen when you need care, but factor all that in. So then you can deal with the financial advisor, the insurance guys and gals, if you will. You can talk to your doctor even about your medical conditions and what kind of help you might need in the future, and start figuring that into the budget. Everybody's different. Every family situation is different. Do you have family members that will be able to help you and care for you? And how realistic is that? Because people don't always know what they're getting themselves into when they care for a parent.
That's true. I mean, and I think the message, what I'm hearing you tell me, is that it can be affordable, that if you know if you do your research and throw all the irons into the pot, then you can determine, okay, then I'll need this amount to live on, et cetera. So you've planned out the future the best way you know how. So I would think you would live a little bit more peacefully. That would be my take on it.
I have seen people who I've had my firm now for 16 years almost, and what I've seen is the people who started planning back then and throughout the years and were realistic about it, what I've seen is they've had a better quality of life when the health issues came up and they needed help. They knew, oh, okay, well, you know what, I could be eligible for this government benefit if I need a higher level of care, so I feel okay now about spending some money on getting some in-home care on a part-time basis, or getting somebody in to help with cleaning and cooking, to go to adult daycare, to, you know, they have a better sense of where they can spend their money and where the government might be able to help, and insurance.
Well, see, so, that's the beauty of coming to you, is that you've got all these tools available,
right,
that the layperson has no idea. They just think, oh, man, I got to pay for an attorney, and then that's going to cost me this, and oh, then there's that, and then there's this. They don't realize that there are programs available for free, perhaps. So it's worth the inquiry to figure out what else is available, because obviously this is a growing problem just from the stats that I read. So
right.
how do we combat this issue and make living easier? And I guess that's kind of what you're selling, is a better way of life.
It's definitely a better way of life. Having quality of life for the rest of your life, no matter what your situation is. And you can only do the best that you can do given your particular situation. But a lot of people don't do that because they're in denial. And that's the beauty of doing, you know, long-term care estate planning, is that you're looking at life, not just death. So many people who do estate planning, they want to just get it over with. They don't want to pay too much because they say, okay, this is what my beneficiaries get after I'm gone. No, what it should also be about, more importantly, is how do I plan for myself? And attorneys are not selling, well, they shouldn't be selling a product. So you're getting that neutral advice, if you will, about what are some of your options so that you can also build a better estate plan. The documents have more meaning for you during your lifetime, not just who gets what after you're gone, which most people focus on with their estate plans.
Well, you said something so interesting. It's about thinking about it in terms of living and not about the dying or the end of life, because that what you plan for your future affects how you live now. So
right.
it is about the living, and there are so many resources, and let's face it, you're an attorney, you have that legalese, you know, it's a system, right? So you're a representative of, not of the system, but you know how to deal with that system that I don't. So
mm-hmm.
It would behoove me to give you whatever it is to have you talk to the system on my behalf.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And,
right.
And, I mean, you if you choose the right attorney, they're there, in my estimation, to help you. And the consequences of them helping you is that, you know, they get paid for what they do. But they're there to help
right.
you and to point out things that that we're not familiar with. But along with the financial abuse is also a physical abuse that I'm sure you have experienced as well. How do we deal with the causes of this kind of physical abuse, and where can people go for help?
Well, if I may, let me just kind of respond to what you were saying about, you know, here's the planning part of it, and that's why they come to an attorney. And, you know, what I've seen, unfortunately, is so many people have gone to attorneys not really discussing those issues or planning for that. So most of the abuse cases that we see, they actually do have an estate plan in place. There's just something wrong with the plan. They didn't choose the right person. The family members are stressed out. They don't know what their options are. They're making mistakes with the finances. Or you end up having family members who are overly burdened caring for the parent. They didn't really realize what they were getting themselves into, and they got into a situation where they're being somewhat abusive, you know. And so where do you go for that? What I like to say is, let's start, first of all, if you have a family member who is not treating the parent well, is to get in there right away and see if you can get somebody else in there to help them. Getting a care manager in there, getting somebody to identify whether or not there really is abuse.
Where would you go for a care manager?
There's a National Geriatric Care Managers Association. If people call our office, we have various care managers that we refer to who we find to be very good. And that might be one step, or getting somebody to the doctor, having one of the family members who can step in and say, look, how do we take care of the parent right now, and see if the child or the family member or whoever this is who is not treating the parent well, if maybe this is an easily something to correct. A lot of times it isn't, unfortunately, because there's been a pattern that's been, you know, ingrained in this parent and this child. And so a lot of times, unfortunately, you have to go to court and file a conservatorship to get someone the legal authority to step in and take over the management of the parent's care and their finances too, in most cases. And then, you know, you can get in and get the parent the kind of care they need and try to remedy the situation that's unfortunately a lot of times gone on too long.
Yeah, I find it fascinating the role that money plays in so many different lives, when even at the passing of a parent or a relative, when it comes time to read the will and the distribution of money or property, what it does to a family. And so explaining is that it already, prior to that loved one's passing, you're already seeing how it's abusing the family.
Well, yeah, people don't wait anymore, because what's happened is the parents are living longer. They haven't necessarily done the best financial plan for themselves, if you will, estate plan. And, you know, the kids are freaked out, who might have thought this was going to be their retirement, or even because the parents promised them this was going to be what they were going to give them after they were gone, and the parents wanted to give it to them, let's say. But don't
you find, too, that a lot of, maybe people in their 60s is a little too young, but maybe 70s that have adult children, or and their adult children are have families of their own, that these people are saying, you know, I put you through college, MBA program, bought you a car, bought you a house, I got a little money left over. It's mine, baby. It's mine.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you have parents who gave their kids a lot, and, you know, they did their part, if you will, and they feel like they did their part, and the kid maybe didn't plan that well, or with the bad economy, look at all the people who are having problems. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's still the parents' money, and it should be used for their care. And I think with the proper advice, the parent can get the right kind of care, can be taken care of, but there's a lot of people who are self-helping out there, and they counted on the parents, you know, leaving them a larger inheritance, and recipe for disaster.
Well, we've often had this conversation that I think this generation, I don't know if it's across the country of this generation, but just in the small pocket of Los Angeles, let's say, it's kind of a me generation, or a very much self-involved generation, and we don't tend to connect anymore. And what I find, it's not literally elder abuse, but what I find is that as a society in general, with the senior population, we toss them away. They,
right.
You know, you've reached a certain age, and well, thank you very much. Here's your gold watch. Here's your luncheon and your flowers, and have a nice day. Instead of keeping in touch with them, you know, visiting them, how are you doing, and engaging in them, because obviously they have a lot of information to share.
Right. They do. They do. It's unfortunate, but, you know, that's what happens with a lot of people. And the fact is, we're a very mobile society. Kids don't always live close to the parents anymore. And, you know, sometimes the parents are living in situations that it makes it very hard for the kids to visit. You know, the parent has wanted to stay in a home and nobody else is around anymore. And, you know, it's something where you have people in transition. Our society is in transition, and we're trying to figure out how to cope with this new paradigm, if you will, of parents living much longer, kids having kids much later, and having responsibility for those children, the sandwich generation, if you will, economy that's gone bad. We have a lot of interesting things to wrestle with as a society, as a race now, of how we're gonna age, and how that's gonna all really pan out. And I don't think people are really facing it, except when the crisis hits.
Well, you know, no, the society doesn't talk about aging in my opinion, in a productive, positive light. It's all about youth.
Right.
So, and then aging comes, well, you've paid your dues, so, but I guess there's not going to be any money left in Social Security, or why should we, I'm a young person, why do I have to pay for an older person?
Right. Forgetting that, you know, if it wasn't for the older person, well, we wouldn't have what we have. Since
right.
they built the country, so I mean,
yeah.
they built it to the point it is right now.
Yeah.
Well,
I know you do a lot of speaking about aging, et cetera. And so, in your experience, what do you find is the hot topic in your field and seniors?
I think, well, there are many hot topics for the seniors trying to stay independent as long as possible and not necessarily being able to do it. So it's a big struggle for them. And how do they go about that transition to a more dependent lifestyle? How do they do that? Looking at how they're going to pay for care, because most people who are requiring care now didn't really plan for needing the care. So what kind of government benefits are available? What should be their plan? And a lot of people are struggling now with, because of dementia, people not understanding, the person who's suffering from dementia, that they can't handle things anymore, and how does somebody legally take over to be in charge of that person?
Well, let me give out your contact information. We have 30
sure.
seconds left. I don't know.
Oh.
It's just amazing where the time goes. There's so much information, and you are the go-to person, in my opinion, because you offer so much. People can contact you by calling 818-508-7192. Again, 818-508-7192, or going to your website, KarasovElderLaw.com. That's KarasovElderLaw.com. Mitch, a pleasure. Anytime you want to come on, this is a great topic. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Lauren. Appreciate it. Thank you for doing this for people.
Oh, absolutely. Please join me next time for another wild and crazy journey in someone else's shoes, as my guest will be psychologist Marcia Lucas, author of Rewire Your Brain for Love. This is Lauren Leibowitz, and thank you so much for joining me and listening to How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. We'll see you next time, and I look forward to helping you find comfort in your own shoes. We'll leave you with Full Moon Rising and Caroline Waters.